Hello there, everyone. My name's Dan Reichert. I'm sitting across the table from my wife, Bianca Reichert. Bonk, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good, too. We're doing our podcast here that we call Painting the Stream.
Yes, that's why I'm sitting here with headphones on.
Yes, that's what we do each and every week. We talk to each other for our own amusement and also for the folks at home to hear about what we've been watching.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what we've been watching lately?
What's that, Dan?
For much of the last month is that old My Hero Academia.
Ooh, quality show.
It is a quality
show. It's a good one.
One of our absolute favorites.
Indeed.
We have watched here on Painting the Stream. We have wrapped up a season. We wrapped up season three. In the last year, we have watched three full seasons of My Hero Academia.
When we started this year, we didn't know about My Hero Academia, or we knew about it, but we hadn't watched it.
Yeah, I feel like I had seen it brought up on Twitter and message boards and the like,
mm-hmm.
Some saying that we would like it, and turns out they were right.
Yeah.
Now that we're three seasons deep, almost caught up. I think there are four seasons now,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if the dubs are on Hulu yet.
Mm.
But eventually, we will certainly get to that as well, as much as we love this show. But this set of episodes we will be discussing today on Painting the Stream is episodes 20 through 25. It's the last six episodes of season three. If you're looking on Hulu, I think the numbering is like 58 to 64 or something like that, if you're going by the Hulu numbering. But let's get down to it. What do you think?
Let's do it. So this whole season, I feel like it was very front-loaded. The first half, there was so much stuff. The All Might, All for One fight happened. The Forest training camp stuff happened. And it's not like I expected it to end in a really bombastic way. But I feel like these last five episodes were kind of just like a bunch of one-off episodes. I mean, granted, the one was a continuation of the provisional hero license
mm-hmm.
exam thing. But by and large, I felt like they were all just kind of setting up kind of transitional episodes. Nothing huge happened in them. I mean, they have their license, their provisional licenses now. I mean, most of them except for Bakugo and Todoroki. But I feel like it's not like we could see them really do anything with it until next season. So, I mean, I feel like it ended a little bit with a whimper for me. There was like two episodes in this batch that I was like really like confused and didn't really like at all.
I think I know what you're referring to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into those. But yeah, I agree. I feel like the end of the All Might and All for One fight, that feels like in any other show that would have been like the absolute
mm-hmm.
season finale. Like, holy shit, this whole season led up to this. And for that to happen like dead center in the season
right.
was kind of crazy, because it's like that wraps up a whole lot of stuff. That wraps up the early season League of Villains stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of wraps up this big climactic All Might and All for One battle. And so I do think the back half of the season is like, well, okay, we'll do another little like test thing with this provisional license, which, you know, I feel like wasn't super important outside of maybe giving like Todoroki and Bakugo a chip on their shoulder about something and introducing some new characters like Yaarashi.
We learn a lot about the other schools and stuff.
Yeah, I think they're laying the groundwork in the back half of the season for stuff that seems like it will be very important going
mm-hmm.
forward. I think we see the relationship between Todoroki and Yaarashi seems like it's going to be a thing. Endeavor trying to become the new number one hero, definitely. We'll get to the end of this stretch here with the big three. They seem like they're going to be pretty important. So
yeah.
Groundwork has been laid here, even with some bad guy stuff.
Right, yeah. With All Might retiring at the end of that fight, the All for One fight, it's just kind of like the last half of the season, I feel like there could have been more about how villains are responding to this. I mean, it was talked about. Like, they said, like, oh, villains are, you know, there's a surge in villain activity. But we really didn't see any of that because we've been in very much like on the school grounds for the last few episodes.
Yeah, there's been a lot of allusions to like crime is on the rise and the public has a different perception of heroes and the media is talking about heroes and what it means with All Might
mm-hmm.
going away. But like outside of mentions like on the news and things like that, or even like, you know, the dog principal will be standing at a podium explaining things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we see it acting out that much, except
right.
for there is one scene in the stretch where you see some real Ninja Turtles ass bank robbers like robbing a cash register.
Yeah, but that doesn't feel like an extraordinary thing. I feel like that would happen before All Might retired.
Yeah, there were plenty of just like random crimes that happened throughout this series.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, they have not really shown everything being in total disarray thanks to the All Might stuff. They just kind of talked about it.
Yeah, I remember early on in the season, there was a lot of talk about the League of Villains and League of Villains inspiring, well, specifically Stain inspiring people to, you know, not accept heroes and stuff like that. And then it kind of culminated in the All for One fight, and then we didn't really hear much about that. It was more or less just like how these villains are acting in All Might's, in the wake of All Might's retirement.
Yeah.
But we see a little bit of League of Villains stuff. But the show really likes to compartmentalize, like, school activity and then the, like, encounters with the villains. And I feel like there was that one part, that one arc in the first season in that big, like, dome that by with the different biomes.
The unforeseen the USJ?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the training camp stuff. But they really like to keep it, you know, kind of separate and not which is fine. I mean, I get the League of Villains has to recover from what happened.
Yeah, it's like that's when they'll do like, oh, here's the sports festival arc or the provisional license arc and things like that.
Yeah, the season would have been more well-paced, I feel, if the All Might fight was towards the end a little bit. But I understand they have to be faithful to the manga, the source material.
Yeah, and to be fair, like, I think there is really, really great stuff in the back half of the season. But pacing, I totally understand what you're saying about how, like, after the high highs of mid-season three, it never quite gets back to that, rather than setting up stuff that, you know, it's not going to be, it's not for naught. I would hope that in season four, it kind of pays off some of this groundwork that they're laying here.
Yeah,
but,
I'm sure it will.
I think we're in agreement here. We're, you know, real good stuff to be found here, but, like, I still feel like I'm coming down from that All Might, All for One
fight. Yeah, totally.
So we started this stretch with just this weird side episode that, like, even in the middle of it, we were both looking at each other like, does this episode suck? Do we, like, I think we hate this
one. Yeah, I did hate it. It was essentially just this, like, one-off episode that happens before the events of the summer training camp. So it kind of goes back in time. And it's this training exercise where All Might plays a villain and Midnight's Mentos, Present Mike, they all play hostages in, like, what appears to be, like, a jewelry store robbery.
Yeah, it's like a crime scene where, like, All Might was a villain who was stabbed, and we need to figure out, like, it's like a Professor Layton puzzle or something.
Yeah, and I guess the problem that the students have to solve was, like, what occurred here, I guess. But for me, like, that's a little lofty how Midoriya reaches the conclusions that he does and ends up being right. It's just, I feel like it's out of nowhere that he comes up with that stuff.
Yeah, and they never really, like, built up, like, they need Batman detective skills. Like, you know, they've always been, like, these kind of big bombastic superheroes, like, you know, battling and things like that. And it seemed weird to all of a sudden have this, like, analytical, like, murder mystery thing. Especially, like, it's introduced with, like, All Might and Deku breaking the fourth wall and be like, hey, it's time for a side episode. Here's the thing from the past. And I guess it kind of serves as a bridge for the stuff that we saw in Two Heroes, the movie, because we see that character from All Might's past and things like that. And the daughter, like, says, oh, come to the Eye Expo or whatever.
Yeah, it sets up the events of the movie. But honestly, that just confuses me because what happens in that movie is so game-changing. Like, if you're going to acknowledge it, it needs to be done in a more official way. Like, not in some one-off episode. Because, like, Midoriya saves the world in that episode.
Pretty much, yeah.
And fights a huge villain and, like, does what, like, essentially is operating on All Might's level in that movie.
Yeah.
And also, he has this amazing hand armor, which lets him punch with abandon.
Mm-hmm.
And, I feel like he could have, if this was canon, he would have gone to the support students, the support hero students, or whatever they're called, and been like, can you make this for me?
Yeah, that thing was great. I would like to keep using that.
Yeah.
And also, you would think when they're, like, settling into the dorms and stuff, Deku would be like, man, I had a fucking crazy summer. Let me tell you about what happened here. I guess a lot of them were there. But...
Well, yeah, some of them were there. I feel like that should have been acknowledged in some other way. But
they should be erecting a statue of him, like, on the dorm or on the campus.
Yeah, so, but not only did that bother me, but just the episode itself was just very weak and just jumping to conclusions that were like, usually I'm on board for it, even though the show gets really absurd sometimes. Usually I'm on board, but this was like, how did Midoriya deduce that they were lovers, that Midnight and All Might were lovers? And it's like random throwing at a dartboard and it happened to land.
And I'm not against, like, a side episode in something, you know? Like, I know a lot of people hate that Fly episode of Breaking Bad, but I actually liked that. And even the kind of side episode they did in, I think, season two, where we were seeing the stuff on the boat with Sue and the sailors and everything, like, You know, if it's a self-contained fun story, then I don't mind kind of just distracting from the main story. But this one distracted from the main story and just didn't really serve anything up on its own right, I didn't think.
Yeah. I almost wonder if they have, like, a certain amount of episodes they have to do per season, and they had to, like, stretch this one out a little bit.
That's possible, because it just did come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why it was presented like that.
Because if they had to make good use of their time, this episode certainly wouldn't be in there. And, like, I feel like 50% of the subsequent episodes wouldn't be in there as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a lot of bouncing around here.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that was kind of unnecessary across the board with all these episodes. But
yeah, and, you know, I'm hoping that the point of the provisional license exam thing was to kind of, like, advance the Todoroki and Bakugo stuff of them having something to prove or whatever. But it was still a bunch of episodes for something that, like, and it's like, okay, we've seen a bunch of these, like, big tests before, and I don't think this was the most interesting one. Basically, it's, you know, Gang Orca was, you know, the villain in this rescue test or whatever, and they have to get a certain amount of points to pass it. And I think the big story of this next episode here was Todoroki and Yarashi. We kind of learn why there's this rivalry and why Yarashi hates Todoroki and Endeavor. Basically, Yarashi grew up obsessing about heroes and everything, and then Endeavor turned out to be kind of a dick when he was trying to get an autograph, kind of slapped him away. And then when he came to school, like, he was trying to say hello to Todoroki during the entrance exam and saw the same look in his eye that Endeavor had of, like, hating the world, and Todoroki was a dickhead at the race and stuff like that. So basically, several different instances made Yarashi be like, man, fuck this family.
Right.
Like, I don't like these guys. And so in the middle of the test, they're just super ineffective because they're bickering the whole time. They wind up working together to make this, like, flame tornado thing to immobilize Gang Orca. But, you know, it's too little too late, it seems.
Yeah. And also, I mean, that's Bakugo and Todoroki and what's his name? The tornado guy.
Yarashi.
Yarashi. They have some of the craziest quirks, like, and the most useful quirks. And the fact that they didn't pass makes me feel like, well, this provisional license is so arbitrary then, like, that, just because they got into an argument.
I think that was the point, is that, like, they were just kind of doing this petty bickering the entire time. And, like, they had these judges that were looking at all the students and how they used their quirks. And they're like, these two are not ready. They were bickering instead of, like, if they had focused together and worked together from the beginning, they probably could have passed. But they just kind of blew it, it seems. So, sure, I get it. I mean, if that goes somewhere, it's not for naught. But,
it's,
you know,
your favorite thing to say.
I don't know a better way to say it. Do I say
not for nothing?
It's not for, I guess that works.
You
right?
say not for not. Listeners at home, you might be pleased to know that Dan says that outside of the podcast all the time.
Well, because, you know, like, if you do something and it's for naught, you can be like, oh, it was all for naught. It was all in vain.
You're saying
and so the opposite is not for naught.
Well, you could say it was in vain, or you could say it was for nothing.
I guess I could say it wasn't in vain.
That's
I never try to talk flowery or poetically or anything like that. I guess it wasn't in vain is a much better way to do that.
Yeah,
right?
Or it wasn't for nothing.
It's less syllables. It's using more normal guy language, which I like to use.
Not for not is weird.
Not for not is weird because it's spelled differently, but it doesn't come across audio wise. I gotta stop saying not for not.
Yeah,
it wasn't in vain.
Okay.
All right, that's like my new thing. Okay, call me out if I fuck that up.
I will.
All right, so Deku sees he passed, and yeah, the other guys didn't. And they get to do a special, like, summer course thing or whatever if they want to get their license. And so I guess the exam, passing it, gives you, like, basically a trainer's license. Or did you have that when you were in driver's ed? Where it's like, at 14, you can drive with your parents. At 15, you can drive to school and work. And 16, you're free to do whatever.
Well, I think when I had a provisional license that would let me drive around, like, for student driving.
Yeah.
I don't know what the other restrictions were on that.
And okay.
That was the precursor to actually getting my full-blown license.
Yeah, that's the thing I was thinking about with this thing, because it seems like the tired guy tells them that, like, well, you can now act on your own. You can, you know, rescue people, or you can, you know, go after villains or whatever, but you still need to graduate if you want to be seen on the same level as a hero. But, like, I guess legally they can do this stuff now. I don't think what else happens here. Oh, yeah, so Cammy, or at least who we think is Cammy, is walking through an alley and starts kind of melting away. And it turns out that's because it's actually that Toga girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I was curious if Cammy ever existed, but it does seem like she did because her friends from her school were like, oh, she's been acting weird for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when Cammy basically looked like her. She kind of Shang Tsunged into her to steal Deku's blood.
Right.
For what is almost certainly nefarious purposes.
Yes. She will probably impersonate him and something terrible will happen. And everyone will be like, what's up with Deku? And then Deku will be like, whoa, I didn't do anything. Oh, who's that guy? That's not me. And then everyone's going to be like, what are you talking about? That looks just like you. And then Deku will be like, but it isn't me, trust me. And then the fake Deku will be like, haha, I got you. And then it'll turn back into Toga, and then there'll be some kind of crazy fight. And then someone will steal her blood, all of it, and make it so she's just a bloodless husk.
Oh, okay.
And then she'll slowly kind of deteriorate into the ground, and where her body was, there'll be a bunch of flowers that grew. And yeah.
I reserve the right to, if that happens exactly as you described, to be very impressed and suspicious that you probably looked something up. So, yeah, I do look forward to, like, I always love a good, like, double thing where it's like, no, I'm the real Deku, you know, oh, I'm seeing double here, you know, like, right. I love those scenes. I'm always a sucker for those. And I'm sure we'll be surprised when Deku does something jerky later on and we forget about that little side thing.
Those are your favorite scenes in Mission Impossible.
I do love that. Every time they reach for the thing, I'm Even though they do it
way too much.
Who would have guessed? Mission Impossible 2 when they do it like 16 times. Mission Impossible 2 is amazing.
Oh god, that's terrible.
So there's a little prison visit. I always like a good bad guy prison visit. And All Might goes to Tartarus prison to visit All For One. And I love how tied up they've got him, where he's like in this chair and he's like, if I scratch my back with this chair, these turrets that are pointed at my face would just like unload into me.
Yeah.
So he's super locked up and does a full on like Hideo Kojima villain monologue about the media and explaining, like, you know, his motivations in the media and, you know, you heroes and everything. So basically, I think this scene is to explain that All For One had been training Tomura to be the one to kill All Might. I think that is his ultimate goal because he got all screwed up by All Might and everything. Maybe he's not able to do it, but he wants to, like, have an apprentice take him out.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway from that.
Yeah. I felt like this scene was kind of one of those scenes that was probably, you know, could have been on the cutting room floor, but yeah.
There was a part in the middle when he was talking so much. I was like, oh man, this is totally like before, you know, you're fighting some Metal Gear boss. It's like, okay, I get it. You're mad at the world because of this. And all right. Let's get to the fight here.
Yeah, that's some of that stuff gets kind of redundant. Like, because the League of Villains and All For One, it's so unclear what their motivations are. You want to bring down All Might? Like, is that it? Like, what is, like, the motivation there? All Might is retired, so you don't even have to bring him down anymore.
It seems to be a very comic book-like, just, like, hatred of heroes. Because it seems like they're not looking for power, necessarily. They're definitely not, like, looking for money. They just seem to be really against the idea of heroes. I think that's the common thing throughout the show, is the good guys have belief and faith in the idea of the hero saving people and helping society. The bad guys are cynical about it and think heroes are full of shit, basically. And then you've got these kind of in-betweeners like Stain that are like, no, heroes are good, but heroes shouldn't be doing it for money or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, to a certain extent, yes. But it's not just that they're cynical. Like, they're actively the ones destroying society by committing all these crimes and trying to kill people and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just like, what is the motivation there? I mean, I totally understand that there needs to be some kind of foil for the good guys, but it would be great if their motivation was, you know, as strong as the hero's motivation. Like, obviously, heroes want to save people.
Yeah.
I just don't know what their deal is. Like, if it was money, like, that would be fine to me. Like, that, I mean, all the evil people on Earth in reality are the ones that, like, do crazy, terrible shit for money. That would make sense to me, but
yeah, and you know, I look at something like Batman, I feel is the media that has my favorite assortment of villains in it, and they've got, you know, the one villain, Joker, who basically just wants to see the world burn, but that's just one guy. I think you've got other guys, like the Penguin's greedy, or, you know, Mr. Freeze, you know, wants vengeance because his wife, you know, died and stuff
but
like that.
But even the Joker wanting to see the world burn, like, that's fine. Like, that's
for
fine
one
motivation.
Character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, just something, like even if it is just, like, we just want to ruin society. But it's not that. It's this weird nebulous want to bring down All Might thing. I'm not really sure what
I feel
it
like is. It has been kind of unclear. That is something I would like if they kind of went further into, is like kind of what's motivating the League of Villains.
Yeah.
So totally. Yeah. And then Bakugo confronts Deku in kind of one of the old training grounds here. And he's basically saying, like, hey, I grew up with you. You used to be some scrub that didn't have any powers at all. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, you're super powerful. And he starts kind of suspecting, like, oh, hey, you're close to All Might. I think he gave you a power.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start fighting. And they have this whole episode 23 here is just a massive fight between Deku and Bakugo. And I loved this for a lot of reasons. I thought the fight itself was excellent, and I think whenever they do these massive fights between two big characters, they really kind of go all out with like the animation and just really clever stuff. Mm-hmm. But I like that like Bakugo is just furious that he grew up worshiping this guy and thinking he was kind of like entitled to like follow in All Might's footsteps.
Right.
And all of a sudden All Might seems to care so much about this kid that he sees as nothing. And mm-hmm. like, why the hell? He's so envious and jealous and angry and everything here. And I thought there was some real good character stuff here where he just kind of breaks down and admits to like, I'm sorry, I thought All Might lost his power because if I wasn't weak, if I wasn't, you know, if I hadn't gotten kidnapped, All Might would have never fought All For One. And I really think the like whole inferiority thing with Bakugo and his anger and everything is really fleshed out.
Yeah,
I think, at this point.
It's clear that Bakugo is the kind of person that needs to like fight out his emotions to work through some stuff.
Because
we really go through a lot. We go through like his confusion about where Deku's power came from, his envy that this kid that was once behind him is now like surpassing him, his shame for feeling guilty about the All Might stuff. He feels like he's responsible for All Might losing his power, which he's not. And all this stuff. So they just kind of fight it out. And Bakugo eventually learns the secret of All Might's power because All Might's there and explains it to him. And Bakugo assures him that he won't tell, which I believe that. Bakugo has proven himself, you know, that he's not one to, like, dabble in villain stuff, even though he's an asshole of a person.
Yeah, I think if they were going to go that route and have him go full bad guy, like, it was set up right there on a platter of, like, when he was literally at the League of Villains place, and he's like, no, screw you guys. He's a dick, but he's not evil.
Yeah, that I feel like that was the moment where it's like, oh, okay, so Bakugo really does want to be a hero.
Yeah, and I think he's really one of the more complicated characters on the show. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Deku is, you know, he's the main character, but he's a little bit naive, and he's just like, oh, yeah, I just want to be a good guy, I want to be a hero, whereas, like, Bakugo does, but he's conflicted and just doesn't know how to deal with his emotions and just instantly resorts to fury and wanting to fight people. And, like, I think he's one of my favorite characters for sure.
Yeah. I think All Might says it well when he says that Bakugo is lacking Midoriya's desire to help other people, to save other people, and Midoriya's lacking Bakugo's desire to win.
Yes, I loved that part. Where it's like they both have very valuable mindsets and skills, but like they're both kind of missing something that the other one has, and that if they work together, they could maybe... Like that was a great scene where All Might came in at the end and explained all that.
Yeah, totally.
And there's a real like Vegeta and Goku relationship between these two, you know, between Deku just being the like, oh, okay, yeah, let's fight. I'm good at this, you know, I'll be a good guy. And then Vegeta just being furious and wanting to beat him all the time. And very, very similar relationship, I think. Or a Solid Snake and Liquid Snake. You know, it turns out probably a lot.
Well, I feel like Vegeta and Goku, like that relationship, they didn't really go that deep into who these people were other than just like surface level. Vegeta's an asshole, a prideful asshole. And Goku's just this like dim-witted, oblivious.
Goku is an idiot.
He's super dumb.
He's
and
a complete idiot.
Like, just doesn't pay any attention to his family, but is like immensely powerful.
Idiot, total father, total idiot, bad father, but also extremely good at fighting. Bad idiot, total father, coming this fall to CBS.
Yeah, I feel like Deku and Bakugo, they really let those characters have time to build and grow. And, you know, there's a lot of character development in the show that was completely absent from Dragon Ball.
Oh my god, this is, I think this show goes a lot deeper than Dragon Ball. I like Dragon Ball Z a lot, but this just blows it out of the water for me.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But yeah, the whole fight, lots of fun stuff from like Deku having to kind of turn up his power just like 3%, you know, to give him a little bit more without going too hard. Lots of slow-mo explosions and kicks. I love the part where he's telegraphing a kick. There's this huge jump and Deku is like, okay, I know he's going to expect the kick. So he telegraphs it and Bakugo is like, oh, here comes the kick. Mm-hmm. And then he just like does a feint and punches him right in the face. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that part. But yeah, they get this huge fight. Eraserhead puts them both on house arrest. These little like robot cops like right. narked on them to the teacher.
Yeah, so they're suspended for a few days.
Yeah, and I think Bakugo gets one more day since he threw the first punch, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, this is probably one of the stronger episodes of the show, I think. So, you know, despite us talking about the pacing of the back half of the season, I think this was excellent. So episode 24 starts with this guy we don't think we've seen yet, looking out the window and smoking. And like, I kept not knowing if he was talking to a voice in his head or if it was like, he's got the news on in the background. And I was like, oh, is that just voices on the news? Mm-hmm. But turns out he is kind of arguing with himself because right. he is a devil, the guy who has the twice quirk, which I thought it was kind of fun to get a little backstory on him mm-hmm. instead of just being some like nameless villain who can duplicate. It's like, oh wow, he has this crazy history of like not knowing if he's the real one because he like made a bunch of like janitor versions of himself
right.
to
yeah,
clean up.
He was
stuff.
Like really reckless with his power at one time, so he like made a whole army of himself to like do menial tasks like clean up and whatnot, and naturally they rebelled against him because yeah. they were just as him as he was. And then there was a huge fight and like it took 9 days and they all killed each other. But at the end of it, he's not even sure if he's the real him or if, yeah. if he's one of the duplicates. So he's kind of conflicted and he says something to the effect of how the League of Villains was the only place that would accept someone as damaged as he was.
Yeah. And like, I thought that was so effective even for like a minor character in the League. Like, I think it'd be really cool if we could get little vignettes for, you know, all those villains mm-hmm. and stuff just to see kind of like, oh, okay, that's a fun like, you know, origin story of this character. Because mm-hmm. I thought that was really effective here. But it turns out he's kind of like recruiting people for the League. And so he's trying to find other people to kind of show that they might be damaged and things like that. And so he sees this burning car after that robbery we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And there are some guys with these like Assassin's Creed doctor masks. You know, those like weird beak masks or whatever.
Marty Skrull.
Yeah, yeah. What are those called?
I don't know.
There's some sort of like plague mask.
Plague doctor.
Plague doctor. I think that's it. Yeah. And so he's like, okay, I'm going to try to bring them in. We later learn the main one is named Overhaul. Mm-hmm. He's just kind of teased. We don't really know too much about him.
Yeah. It's unclear what his power is, but he kept talking about something like, oh, they need help. They need to, I don't know.
Maybe to hone their villainy or something.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what his deal is. And I didn't look it up. Usually I look it up, but I decided I don't want to spoil myself with
yeah.
him.
Also, the gang stealing the stuff is named the Reservoir Dog, so sure. I like this weird cutaway to the principal dog talking about hair care.
Yeah.
And how you need to sleep to make sure your hair is as luscious as possible.
Yeah. I don't know if that's how it works. Maybe for him.
For dogs, maybe.
For little mammal men.
Possibly.
But
in this world.
He's so cute.
He is.
It's hard to take him seriously because he's so darn cute.
He's great. He's got power, too, though. He's cute and has power.
Well, he's very smart.
Yes, he is. There's a part here where, you know, we were loading this episode up and like the key art on Hulu was Deku running alongside this guy that like at first I was like, is this a young All Might? Like, who is this blonde, you know, like huge dude or whatever? Mm-hmm. And we actually see him for the first time here when All Might is kind of eyeing this guy in the crowd as there's a flashback of Nezu talking about like, oh, you know, there's some students here that might be good successors to you. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're instantly getting an idea that this new guy might wind up being important. Mm-hmm. Which speaking of him, he pops up, his face just shows up in a wall
yeah.
when Deku is taking the trash out. I like this a lot.
Yeah, this was weird. It was yes. it was like in a video game where the geometry like in someone's model just kind of
it's like GoldenEye, someone's running against a door and you can just see their gun and the face sticking through it.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I thought this was really cool because when I saw the art of him, I thought it was just going to be like an All Might type character where it's like, oh, okay, it's going to be big buff blonde guy that's, you know, really good at fighting. Mm-hmm. And then when he's just doing this weird like T-1000 face through the wall and then coming up through the ground and everything and just acting really weird. Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is going to be like a fun twist on this character, I think. Which, yeah, he winds up being pretty great.
Yeah, he's part of the big three.
Yes, the third years at UA High School. And so they're brought in because they've done actual work studies before.
Yeah, during that speech that the principal was making, he alludes to these hero work studies and how the program should be accelerated for first-year students because of all the goings-ons with villains and whatnot. So the big three UA third-year students come in to, I guess, give a talk about their experience with work study stuff.
Yeah, and I like how they alluded to, like, hey, you guys have done these internships before, but the heroes kind of see you as guest students when mm-hmm. you do that. But here it's more like a sidekick situation if you've done an actual work study. And so the first one we meet by name is Amajiki. She's this girl that has purple hair. I'm sorry. Go back. Amajiki is the guy with kind of purplish hair who sees everyone with potato heads. And I think that was him. He's very, very nervous. And so I think he was trying to, like, not psych himself out. Uh-huh. And it didn't work at all because he spends the rest of this episode just, like, putting his forehead against the wall. And I don't think I have any idea what his power is, his quirk.
So here you're supposed to imagine the audience in their underwear to overcome your nerves. In Japan, do you have to imagine the audience as potatoes?
I don't know if that's like an actual thing or if that's just that character has this weird, I was going to say quirk, but that means something different here. yeah, I don't know. I'd certainly never heard of that before. But did you get any sense of what his actual quirk is?
Like no. Power? I mean, he had a really intense stare, so I don't know if that has something to do with it.
Yeah, they like zoomed into his eye at one point. I think that's when he saw the potatoes. Yeah. But Hado is the purple-haired girl. She's got like kind of lighter hair, very talkative and friendly. And Mineta, just calm, cool, and collected when an attractive new student comes in. She asks about his balls on his head, mm-hmm. the purple balls, and I think he takes it differently and he gets very excited about her asking about his balls and drools all over his desk.
Yes.
As he is wont to do. But then the wall melt guy that we met from earlier, we find out his name is Mirio Tagata. And I love this character.
Yes.
We have not talked about him off mic here, but everything we saw to kind of wrap up this episode here, I thought he was really interesting and funny and mm-hmm. weird with an interesting quirk.
He's very enthusiastic.
Yeah, and capable, it seems. And his quirk's awesome, I think.
Yeah, he insists on demonstrating the quirk to everyone. And he insists throughout it, and the other big three students describe how it's not so much the quirk that's awesome, it's that he's been able to master it.
Yeah.
And it's his skills and practice that made it as amazing as it is.
Yeah, because a couple students are saying stuff like, oh, you're just lucky you got born with an awesome quirk. And it's like, no, he like busted his ass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that was really interesting that they clarified that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's talk about the actual quirk because I think they do a really good job of explaining what this does and showing it.
It seems like he's able to just render himself into, like, nothing, so he just can infinitely fall through things.
He can no-clip.
Yeah, and, like, warp through things by, like, depending on what direction he's facing. And he described how if he is falling through the ground, because the ground can't, like, overlap with him, as soon as he snaps out of his quirk, the ground just shoots him out, and that's how he's able to, like, warp and stuff.
Yeah, like, the matter of the ground, like, repels him from in a certain direction. He's learned how to, like, angle that.
Yeah, and how even in the relatively, like, simple things that he does, it required so many different steps to master and just become second nature to him.
Yeah, I love the way they show that whenever they show, like, a little diagram mm-hmm. of him being like, well, yeah, it might look like I'm just going through a wall, but here's what I have to think about every mm-hmm. time is I have to do this and that. And then they explain that, like, everything is transparent or, you know, no clipping, basically. So sound isn't going into his eardrums. Breath is not going into his lungs. Mm-hmm. His retinas aren't working. So he has to just like kind of plan all this stuff out, and he has no sensory stuff that he can rely on whatsoever.
Right.
And so just what an interesting thing that, like, I think a lot of shows would do something where it's like, oh, he can go through walls, mm-hmm. but never explain it further. And like this one explains it in detail along with the difficulties and what he has to think about and fucking diagrams mm-hmm. of how he's doing this. Like, I think that's one of the little things that puts the show above so many other similar like superhero type things for me.
And he's also really strong. So he's able to just like hop around and punch everyone, but Deku figures out that like at the moment right before he makes contact, you can counter his attack because he'll, you know, manifest physically.
Yeah.
But
he's so good, he's seen people try that before. Right. And he's like, oh, I knew he was probably gonna do that.
Right.
So also he has to be naked. for the yeah. stuff to work. So at one point he apologizes, like, oh, I hope you didn't see my weenie. I did my best to make sure you couldn't. So just another funny little element to this guy. But I love everything about this character, and I do hope he's a big thing going forward.
Yeah, and he seems like an upbeat guy.
Yeah. He screams the word power on occasion, and the text shows up on the screen. I like that a lot. But yeah, and his warp is kind of like Scorpion from Mortal Kombat, where he's just, all of a sudden he's behind you and trying to kick your ass. And he does kick everyone's ass. Like, he wants to fight everyone in Class 1A and does so handily.
Including the women.
Oh, yes. He just destroys everyone.
Yeah.
Naked. Then kind of wraps up with, like, Deku calls Gran Torino, and Gran Torino says, like, oh, maybe you should reach out to All Might's former sidekick, which are we supposed to... Is that supposed to be a hint at anything? Do we know who that is?
Well, he said to reach out to All Might because maybe All Might can connect you with his former sidekick, which I don't think we know who that is. But also, you're glossing over the really weird thing about Gran Torino not being able to take Deku under his wing because he was busy with something on a computer.
He was working at, like, a call center or something.
Yeah, I was really curious about what was going on there. And he still had his, like, fish pastries from... You remember those?
He loves those, yeah. Microwave fish pastries or whatever. Yeah. So yeah, they're definitely setting stuff up for season four here. And I think a lot of pieces are in place. You know, we've met some new characters, so we don't have to go through the whole origin once four starts. So I'm excited about that, even if it led to some weird pacing through this season. But yeah, this show continues being awesome.
It's a great show. Great anime
yes,
show.
My favorite. My favorite
Hero Academia.
That's true. That's the show.
That's what the show's called.
That's the title right there on the screen. Look it up on Hulu if you'd like to watch it. It'd be weird if you've listened to this much of us talk about this show if you have not watched it.
Because I bet there's at least a handful of people that listen to this that haven't watched the show.
Possibly. I was talking to our friend Dave recently, and he listens to the show, and I think he said that he'd listened to a bunch of My Hero Academia episodes of our podcast, and him and his wife Katie are now going through the show, and he's like, oh, right, okay, yeah, I remember them talking about this. So we do know at least one that is listening to the podcast before the show.
Well, the fact that it happens to be someone that we know personally makes me think there's got to be a bunch of people. I think, like, I don't know, if people listen to podcasts the same way I listen to podcasts, sometimes I'll just have them on in the background and not necessarily be following every single thing that's being said.
Oh, definitely.
So maybe it's just like a comfort thing. Like, people just find comfort in our voices and just want to hear us talk because it's like a warm blanket on a cold winter night.
Well, that is a very nice thought. And if you happen to be one of those people who enjoys listening to us talk about stuff, might I say, if you want to check out our Patreon.
What a segue.
Look at that. That was pretty good. We didn't even plan on that one. Yes, we do a little Patreon here on Painting the Stream. We keep it real simple. It is a $1 tier. Gets you an ad-free version of the podcast each and every week. I got a little community there on the Patreon page, too. If you want to come in and comment, you know, we'll come in there and talk to you and let you know what we're going to be watching the next week. But also, you're going to get... What was that?
You're moving your hands around like a presenter. It's just me in here.
This isn't a video podcast by any means. I don't know. My mom does that, too. I think I have some gene that makes me do that. But you also get, on top of the ad-free version of the podcast each and every week, patrons, each and every one, will get their own Bonku.
Indeed.
Which, Bonk...
Their custom Bonku for you.
Do we have a custom Bonku for a listener and supporter
this
week?
Yes, we do.
Oh, who's that?
His name is Fernando.
Fernando.
Fernando, what can I say about Fernando? You know what? I'm just going to put it in this Bonku. How about that?
Let's hear it.
His eyes twitched in fear as he recognized the beast known as Fernando.
Whoa. All right, cool. Fernando sounds awesome.
Yeah, he's frightening. You want to avoid him, lurk in the shadows. He can't see you if you're in the shadows
powerful.
Of the tall grass. Yeah.
Okay, he's like a T-Rex.
You'll have to keep his meter down. If his meter fills up and it's red, then you got to just run away.
It doesn't just cancel the mission right away? You get a chance to still
fight him? No, you can try to distract him by throwing some coins or throwing a rock against a tree and he might go there. So then that'll give you an opportunity to get out of the way, but...
You can't fast travel if he's after
you. Oh, no. You have no hope of fighting him, defeating him in a fight. You just have to avoid him. Do your best out there, guys.
The powerful Fernando.
Fernando's on the prowl.
Well, thank you very much, Fernando, and thank you to each and every one of our supporters and listeners of this here podcast. We're coming up on 100 episodes, and we're going to keep going past that and beyond.
Yes, of course.
So if you want to email us, you can email us at panningthestream@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @panthestream. You can find out what we're going to be watching the next week. If you got Apple Podcast there, if you give us the old 5-star review, that's always very helpful and appreciated. And I want to thank Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thanks, bro.
And thanks to all you listening. Thanks to Bonk.
Thanks to
you. Always, each and every week. And we will see you all next week on Painting the Stream.
Bye.